The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
The 22nd of November marked 61 years since C.S. Lewis's death. To commemorate this, we are going to be hearing an episode from the Unbelievable podcast, which we recorded this time last year, to celebrate the 60th anniversary of Lewis's death. What you're about to hear is the third part of a discussion that I had with atheist Dan Barker and Christian Dr. Carolyn Weber.
Welcome back to the final part of Unbelievable, looking at whether 60 years after his death, C.S. Lewis is still relevant today. I did say that I would love to hear a little bit more about your stories. So, Dan, I know you first encountered C.S. Lewis as a Christian. I'd love to know, did your opinion of Lewis change sort of as your journey towards atheism started? I mean, what did you begin to think of Lewis the more you read and the more you sort of began to start towards atheism?
Well, yes, my opinion did change, but it wasn't like I had him at the front of my mind through all of that. You know, it was only years later thinking back, oh, yeah, I used to read Lewis. So, you know, I don't think he was a major influence in my Christian life. He was a nice supplement, I suppose it would be. I read, of course, Mere Christianity, and then The Great Divorce, which I thought was brilliant writing. I thought it was the way he tells those stories, you know. The screw tape letters were kind of screwy, but he's trying to make a point, you know, and it's all literature and it's all analogy. And I did read, I think I read all the Narnia books as a believer. And it's interesting because as a believer, when I was reading them, the Christian allusions did not jump out at me. You know, you hear people say they read Aslan was a figure or a type of Christ. None of that happened. I was just reading it for the story. You know, this is a fun story. This is great. And it was only later when I heard people trying to analyze, and I don't know if this happens a lot in literature, what does this actually really mean? Perhaps Lewis did have in the back of his mind some, I don't know, proselytizing attempt or maybe just illustrative attempt. But at the time, as a Christian, I just read them and I enjoyed reading them just for the, you know, just for the fun of reading, because reading is great. Years later, of course, coming as an atheist, as a joyful and happy and moral atheist, and they're not all that way. I know some jerks who are atheists, but I know some jerks who are Christians. But years later,
me too. Yeah, there's all sorts of jerks.
Every group has its fringes in it, and you can't paint all Christians or all atheists with the same brush. You can't do that. We all have kind of different backgrounds and different motivations and different personalities. Who knows where that came from? We just interviewed Robert Sapolsky, who wrote the book Determined, where he thinks there's no such thing as free will. And of course, it was all predetermined by our genetics and our past and our cultures and all that. And later years reading C.S. Lewis, I read back to it again and again appreciated his writing. And because I'm a writer, I'm working on my 11th book right now. And I'm really jealous of his writing, the way he put his words together, the way he was able to summarize, the way he was somewhat self-deprecating. You know what I mean? He wasn't like being some big preacher type. And he was more accessible, I think, to the average reader than a lot of these so-called know-it-alls who, you know, who preach at you. But as I was saying earlier, I don't think his moral argument really carries much weight at all. It looks like he's trying to reverse engineer, because he has in mind that there's this God, right? I don't think he came to his belief in God as a result of contemplating moral principles. I think he was using that as a way to say, well, here's a way we can get to God. Because I don't see that. I don't see that there's a universal moral law that all humans share or a universal ought. I think there are conditional oughts. I think we can say, unlike Lewis, I think we can say that if we wish to have a world or a situation or a life that has minimal amount of harm in it. If that's what we want, then we ought to do these things. It's conditional. If you wish that, then. And if you don't, what about the psychopaths in the world? 4% of humans are psychopathic. They don't have that wish. Are they to be our moral guides? And sometimes they are. Sometimes they run our banks, and sometimes they run our governments. They have no empathy. They have none of that. They can't be taught empathy. There's something broken in their brains, and they can't even learn it. They can pretend it. So anyway, reading Lewis in later life, I think, well, that was nice. I think we can say that C.S. Lewis is still relevant to Christians. Christians who are within the fold, who want to be, I don't know, affirmed or comforted, or they want some good reading. And since I think most Christians are good people, most Christians have good motives, they want to do the right thing. My mom even said that. She was raised as a Christian because she wanted to do the right thing. She wanted to live a life that was right and moral and good. She later became an atheist after I did. And then she said, you know what? It's so great because I don't have to hate anymore. I don't have to hate homosexuals. I don't have to hate people who have abortions. I don't have to hate this or that. I can just accept all human beings for who they are. So C.S. Lewis to me is passé, I guess, except for his writing style. I'll continue to read him because I want to be able to write like that. But to me, that's the only reason he's relevant today.
I mean, Carolyn, in many ways, your journey was sort of the opposite of Dan's. And you first encountered Lewis. I mean, obviously, you first encountered him through Narnia, but you first encountered some of his kind of apologetics arguments as an agnostic, a seeking agnostic. Do you think that you now approach his works differently as a Christian? Or do you think it was kind of as an agnostic that his works particularly spoke to you and drew you towards Christianity?
Mm. Well, I shared Dan's appreciation of Lewis's writing ability. I'm a writer as well, and I'm always left in awe of someone who can be both erudite and accessible, you know, and someone who can have a wonderful combination of logic and imagination. And I also think of someone who can have wisdom and wit and wonder still. I think those are really difficult threads to bring together. When I read Narnia as well, I did not read it as a theological story, of course, as a child and then even later growing up. But I think it's a perfect example of how those kind of archetypes do speak to deep things within ourselves. And what he and Tolkien saw as the good dreams that point towards the greater dreams, the things that are imprinted within us. I think Lewis remains relevant and continues to remain even more so to me as I hope to grow in my faith. I'm still really far behind anyone else in many ways in that sense too. But the range of his works, I think, are really interesting. The range of his genres, you know, that he writes about science fiction and he writes about children's stories and he writes about letters and prayer and he writes about grief. There's so few authors with that kind of range. And, you know, and he tackles the big questions. I think what's really interesting is he invites us to ask questions. He doesn't sweep them under the rug. You know, there's an ethos he brings as having lost his own mother at a young age and going through two wars. And, you know, there is a genuine ethos that I think is still very, would be even more applicable to people today, young people reading him today in our world. I mean, our world has always got wars. Those never change. But what we're facing in our own world right now, I think he brings a great ethos to that. What I have appreciated about him even more so as I continue to read him, and by no means is he perfect, no author is, but he does encourage us to ask questions and the big questions and the difficult ones. But I think what's really probably for me most compelling about a writer like Lewis that will always remain relevant is he gets me to think about the questions God is asking of me, is asking of us. So that we're asking questions all the time, but we're also being asked questions. And I'm not saying that this is from a big booming cosmic voice, but I'm saying that within ourselves, that very first question in Genesis, you know, where are you? It's not that God went missing, it's we did. Who do you say I am? Who do you say I am? And being truthful with yourself, it's not about the person to the left or your right, it's you. Who do you say I am? What consequences does that have for therefore how you make your decisions? How you shape your concept of reason and personal responsibility, and do you love me? So I'm struck by how I'm always sort of discomfited after I read him. So he has this uncanny ability to kind of make me feel like I'm having a pint with him in a pub or a cuppa. And it's quite self-deprecating, as Dan said, and quite inviting to be with him. And yet he's also asking these hard questions of ourselves and pointing to how God is asking those of us as well. And how we answer them makes all the difference.
And Carolyn, in your journey, do you think there was a specific C.S. Lewis quote or story or idea or book that really began to kind of unpick your agnosticism and move you towards Christianity? Obviously, it wasn't just C.S. Lewis that led you in that direction.
I really was moved by his essays, his thoughts on prayer, particularly The Weight of Glory, because it forced me to recognize that everyone we meet is immortal. And if I don't believe in something beyond death, the great philosophical question, what happens to us when we die? Are we gone? Are we rot? Or is there something else? It's fine and good for me, but what of the person next to me? Love for both my God and myself, but also for my neighbor. And as he famously says, you know, there are no ordinary people. And everybody you meet is immortal. And that changes our hands and how we interact with people, even when we're not in the mood. It doesn't mean we're forced into fake joyousness. I think that's actually one of the most discrediting things of superficiality in any religion, but particularly Christianity. I think it makes, though, all the difference between friendship and fellowship. It's not the friendship of the ring. You know, it's the fellowship of the ring. And I think it is for a reason. It doesn't mean that you have to be delightful or you have to be superficial. You can tithe high and low in fellowship in a way that you can't with friendship, because friendship will always stop at a certain point. And I was moved by, more than moved, I was moved in heart and mind, but I was really challenged and changed by that way of thinking that forces you out of your self-referentiality, out of that abyss of solipsism, really, which eventually I believe it is, that we need to be saved from.
Dan, I'd love to hear your thoughts in response to what Carolyn's just said there. But I would also, there was a line as I was rereading Mere Christianity this week, there was a line that struck me and I just thought, I really want to know what Dan thinks about this. And it's that where Lewis says, I'm not asking anyone to accept Christianity if his best reasoning tells him that the weight of the evidence goes against it. That's not the point at which faith comes in. Obviously, we've spoken a little bit about faith and reason, but I think I was particularly struck by him talking about the fact that he doesn't want anyone to believe in Christianity if the weight of evidence goes against it. And obviously, that's kind of your experience, that you thought that evidence went against it and therefore you left Christianity. I mean, presumably what Lewis says there is incredibly relevant for you.
Well, yes, the weight of the evidence does go against Christianity. I mean, that to me, that's very clear, and to a lot of people, and to a lot of former ministers that I know and former believers that I know, and even former non-believers. My wife is a third-generation non-religious person, and I can't think of anyone more kind, generous, moral, giving than her as a lifelong atheist. But faith, if you have to accept something by faith, you're admitting that that cannot be accepted on its own merits. Faith is not knowledge. If it's knowledge, then you don't need faith. Faith is this attempt to go above and beyond what you know to be true and to commit yourself. Of course, there are many different usages of the word faith. But Lewis is not going to convince those readers who are convinced that the weight of evidence goes against Christianity, which it does. Christianity is not basically true. There are some truths in the Bible, obviously. There's some truths in the Bhagavad Gita, right? And it's interesting that when I'm reading the Bhagavad Gita, it's a lot different from somebody who actually believes Krishna exists. If somebody really believes Krishna is the God who governs their life, they're reading the Bhagavad Gita in a totally different way from the way I am reading the Bhagavad Gita. The same thing with me and Carolyn reading the Bible. As she actually believes that that God is a real person or a real being, obviously it's going to resonate differently to her and to C.S. Lewis than to someone like me and others who think it's either a myth or a metaphor or a literary device, or in some cases, maybe even a lie or a misconception, right? But it's certainly not true that this God exists. And if you use reason and you analyze, when Jesus said you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself, he was quoting an Old Testament passage. And when you look at that Old Testament passage, loving your neighbor, if we use reason to know what that actually meant, loving your neighbor in that Old Testament passage meant loving your Hebrew neighbor. It did not mean loving the neighbors of the cities that you were going to conquer and kill and make slaves of them. No, it didn't mean loving them. It meant taking care of your own. And all religions do that. Every group of people takes care of their own kin, right? So love your neighbor as yourself did not mean, and if Jesus was God and he said, I and the Father are one, he must have known that that was what was meant with loving your neighbor. And maybe that's being a bit too rational and looking at that. And I think I applaud Christians like Carolyn who are taking that verse in a broader sense than what it was actually intended when Jesus said those words. So using reason, there's much to criticize about the Bible, but just using our basic human love and appreciation for each other as human beings, I think we can be charitable and attribute that our motives, all of our motives here are good. We want what is good. We want what is right. We want what is truthful and joyful. And I think C.S. Lewis did too. I don't think he was a hypocrite like a lot of pastors. I don't think he was a phony. I think he truly believed that this magical supernatural being existed and was governing our lives. And so within that context, I have to say I appreciate his writing.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. And Carolyn, so obviously for Lewis, he did believe that there was evidence for Christianity, and that was your experience. You sort of thought there was evidence for your Christianity. I mean, is that one of the reasons why you would say that Lewis is still relevant today, not just for Christians, as Dan says, but also for a much wider audience?
Yes. I mean, he's not just a pebble in a random pond, you know. I mean, there's billions of people worldwide that believe in a God or in something beyond themselves, but also almost 3 billion that would identify themselves as Christian or following a Christian God. And that's not an ad populum argument, but it is a point to say that, you know, it's fairly arrogant to dismiss everyone in that bucket, you know, as being deluded or wrong, perhaps. I mean, I mean, when you think about it, there's, I mean, very, very famous people in that line. And there's a long Christian tradition. And I think Lewis talked about that, you know, that these other people he had been reading, you know, we can look from, you know, Chesterton and MacDonald and Herbert and whatnot up to, you know, gosh, Mother Teresa and Martin Luther King. I mean, my goodness, there is a strong intellectual background to this thinking faith, to this believing wisely. But I think the example of the Good Samaritan, which was one of Jesus's own teachings, shows how he was defining neighbor. And I don't think it was limited to just the Hebrew. And the book of Acts makes it very clear that this is something for everyone. That is, this is new wineskins. And so those old myths, they both point to the truth and they debunk the untruth, I think, very clearly. And so I would beg to disagree that Christianity is wrong or irrelevant.
Dan, do you have any final thoughts on C.S. Lewis as we come to the end of this podcast?
I think I pretty much have said it all. You know, I'm no expert. I haven't read everything. I guess one little tidbit here was his mistake in his famous trilemma, if you know what that was. And you hear people like Josh McDowell repeat that. And Lewis wasn't the first to say it, I don't think. But when you're considering Jesus, you know, what was he like? He was either a liar or a lunatic or a lord. And those aren't the same words that Lewis used. But basically, that's the idea. A man like that, you know, was he a lunatic? He could have been. Was he a liar? He could have been, right? Was he a lord? He could have been. But he's ignoring others. It's not just three choices. And in my book, Godless, I point out that there's another L, and that's the word legend. If Jesus was a legend, whether he existed or not, and he may have, there is a probability that Jesus did exist as a real person, and there are good reasons to question that. But putting that aside, assuming that he did exist, the New Testament very likely could have been, as has happened many times in history, written by people who took that core story and then exaggerated it. And you can see the footprints of legendary growth, even just in the resurrection story, for example. The earliest ones are very simple. The earliest one by Paul, and then by Mark, and then by Matthew. And as you go through the first century, those stories get bigger and bigger and grander and greater. And when you get to John, you have this huge, big story. Well, if you put them in order, you can see that. There's a legendary growth in the telling of the story as the time passes. And so the picture that emerges in the New Testament may have been based on a real person, but there's a very high likelihood that that cartoon character in the New Testament was really the result of legendary embellishments. So it's not limited to just liar, lunatic, or Lord. It could have also just been a legendary, or even some people believe, mythical story.
Dan, just quickly on that. I mean, one of the reasons he sort of uses that trilemma is to debunk the idea that Jesus was just a moral teacher. I guess he's obviously had lots of people say, I don't believe this, this, and this, but I do believe that Jesus was just a good moral teacher. I mean, would you say that he is able to just be a good moral teacher?
He was not a good moral teacher. He said a couple of good things. It would be surprising if he did not. But much of his advice was really what we would not call moral. He talked about, he showed how compassionate he was by saying that there are some slaves that you should not beat as hard as other slaves. He talked about, he said there are some men who should make themselves into eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. And some early Christian believers took a knife to themselves as a result of that verse, and they turned themselves into eunuchs because they were believing Jesus. He said you should pluck out body parts. He said you should hate, if you want to be my disciple, you should hate your mother and your father. He talked about a lake of fire where there would be torment. So there were some good teachings in there. In the New Testament, test all things and prove all things and hold fast to that which is good. You know, I think that's a good teaching. But on balance, I think any one of us could have come up with a better moral system than Jesus did. He reflected the times that he lived in, right? And if you buy into this whole idea of this powerful, controlling, curse-hurling God who's going to punish you if you don't worship on the Sabbath, or if you worship idols, or if you intermarry with somebody of the wrong religion, if you buy into that, then you think, well, Jesus came to save us from all of that. Well, then you think he's a good moral teacher. But on balance, if you look at how relevant his moral teachings were to the world we live in today, there's not that much there. And certainly there's nothing there that any of us couldn't have come up with on our own with just a little bit of thinking.
Carolyn, I don't know whether you've got any thoughts about that, and also any thoughts, final thoughts about C.S. Lewis and why you think he is relevant. But just quickly, before you answer all of that, I just wondered, the final lines of Mere Christianity, I just wondered what your response was to them. It says, look for yourself and you'll find in the long run only hatred, loneliness, despair, rage, ruin and decay. But look for Christ and you will find him, and with him, everything else thrown in. I just wondered whether that was your experience, Carolyn, of becoming a Christian.
Yes, it was, and it continues to be. Certainly there are difficult things in the Bible, and difficult things even spoken by Jesus himself, if we take those recordings. And yet, as Lewis says, that Mere Christian at some point, you know, there are, and he says this in The Weight of Glory, there are very difficult things, and actually sometimes examining the things that are most terrible and most frightening lead us to the greatest insights, as he discusses when he starts to think about glory. There is actually a lot of historical support for Jesus having been here. You know, Lee Strobel's case for Christ is fairly convicting, but we have more support for his life than we do for something like, than we do for the Odyssey, you know, which we teach in all of our freshman courses. So there's actually quite a bit of historical support. But I think what was so radical about Jesus is, yes, a lot of those stories, he teaches in parable. And that doesn't mean that they can't appeal to faith, but I think it means that they're not limited, that they can't appeal to reason, but they're not limited to reason. And parable allows for interpretation, and it allows for, and he was using those parables based on his life at the time, of course, and the audience and how they would have appealed, but they speak of things that are very still relevant to us today. And so it's easy saying to pluck out your eye. If we are going to talk about literalisms, is he saying to cut off your hand if it offends you? I don't know. Perhaps me as a trained reader, I tend not to believe that that's what he's asserting. I tend to think that it would be within the power of story that he came, not as a theologian, but as a storyteller, as Madeline L'Engle says. And that's how we glean the truth and the morality from those stories. But what he is saying is radical. He's not political. He's not advocating any nationality. He's not advocating anything, even to Caesar. And he's operating in this space that's incredibly unique and liminal. And he calls us to answer for our own hearts. And that's a question that lays one open. And his teachings do look at, grace is not fair. Grace trumps karma. I mean, I think if we operated according to karma, we'd all be in trouble. But the stories of the wage being, paid unfair wages, all those kind of things, they point to really how incredible something like grace is. And the fact that I agree with Lewis that if we really were to take the promises at their word and the glory and the gifts that we are promised, we wouldn't be able to bear the weight of them on our own backs, let alone for our neighbor.
Thank you so much, both of you. I'm afraid that is all we've got time for today, but I would love to hear what everyone else thinks. Obviously, Carolyn thinks Lewis still is relevant. Dan, not so much, perhaps for Christians within their sort of Christian world, but definitely not for non-Christians. But thank you so, so much, Dan Barker and Carolyn Weber. It's been an absolute pleasure. That was the final part of a discussion that I had with atheist Dan Barker and Christian Dr. Carolyn Weber on Premier Unbelievable, looking at whether C.S. Lewis is still relevant today. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @PremierUnbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.